Welcome to the Disruptive Minds Business Podcast. I'm your host, Tevia Holst with Takota Accounting. Today, please welcome Nellie Garten, CEO and co-founder of Tablecloth.io, a SaaS platform for private investment. Welcome, Nellie.
Thank you so much, Tevia. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes. Awesome. So I do want to start off, obviously, you know, tech and finance and investing are all big topics these days. And so I love to jump right in and play on the name of the podcast and say, what is something disruptive that you would say you have either taken part in your business or your industry, or that you have seen happen in your industry? Shouldn't be too hard for tech, right?
There are so many directions to go on that one, but I will keep it fairly simple. I mean, the fundamental approach of Tablecloth is really attempting to disrupt certain sectors that were for a very long time not paying attention to the effects that they were having on the planet, the communities that they're in, for their employees. And so we're bringing a set of information to business leaders that will help them to understand, not only am I making a profit, but what impact am I having on the world that I care about?
Sure. I have to tell you, I identify with that like motive so much, because I think there's too much in the world that's just what's in it for me. Where's my profit? And I identify in my company also with, okay, we will make profit. That is important. You know, we got to pay for stuff. However, let's make a bigger impact while we do that. So I know in our pre-interview, we talked a little bit about this. So I'm going to go right there because it's a good segue into the ESG conversation in your industry, which is environmental and social governance. Talk to me about that and your mission and how you guys are interacting with that and your feeling on that.
Yeah, I mean, it is a hot topic right now. And from my perspective, E, S, and G are components that every business has. If you have employees, you have a social impact. If you have a footprint, you have an environmental impact. And it's a matter of just whether you are paying attention to it. ESG also, from my perspective, is not a it's not a score, it's not a mandate. It's information that helps you to make decisions for your business. And so that has been the perspective that we have taken from day one. It's not, how do I make this, you know, into something that I can say, oh, I have a 74, you have a, you know, 63, whatever it might be. That doesn't give leaders information to be able to make decisions. And so we really try to dive into the deeper data underneath that and give people transparency into that, so that they can make whatever decisions they need to make to balance out things like profit and purpose.
So to clarify, to make sure I'm following, that's sure. What Tablecloth helps companies do is identify so that almost it's comparable across, so you can see what's happening.
Yeah, and provide context to that. So, you know, we'll look at things like wages. What wages do you pay? What's your average wage? And what we'll do is then look at that in the context of the place where people live. Is it a living wage where they live? Because in rural Ohio, it could be very different than where I am in San Diego, which is a very expensive location. So I think, you know, providing that context, I like to say we take data, we turn it into information that can drive action. But throughout that process, it's not that we're saying, you have to hit this score here. It is, here's information. How do you balance that with all the other business decisions that you have? So this information, from my perspective, really is about value creation for businesses as well as risk mitigation.
So talk to me a little bit about the background there. Like, this is such a big job to identify, contextualize these things so that people can make actionable decisions. And I mean, the takeaway for our listeners would be, it doesn't really matter where you're starting, you know, get the information, and it's all about forward movement. It's, am I doing better than I did last year? It's no different than setting your goals and your financials and are making positive progress. How did you land here? Like, what is a little bit of maybe background that like brought you to the importance of this message?
Sure. So I never would have pegged that I would be working with private equity and finance, that I would run a technology company. So I come at this, I have a PhD in policy and management and was both an academic, but also really a practitioner. So worked with hundreds of different types of organizations to help them do better in general. And so I'm a very kind of applied approach person. So really, how do we operationalize things? How do we actually implement change in organizations? And so that's really the perspective that I bring. I met my business partner, who is our CTO and my co-founder. And basically over a beer, he said, "I want to make software out of your brain." And I said, "That's weird." And here we are 9 years later. And so basically, you know, serial entrepreneur who was very good at productizing these ideas. So really, we're kind of bringing both of those pieces together to bear on a sector that typically, you know, has not always been seen as the best actor in the world. Private equity sometimes has the reputation of coming in, stripping value out of companies and mm-hmm. selling for parts kind of thing. And I think that the sector, there are ways in which to use those tools to build healthier and sustainable good companies. And so that's what we're helping them to evaluate, is whether they're doing that with looking at what are those ripple effects that they're having. So helping people to understand, I mean, the living wage is a good and easy one, but also things like turnover rates. I mean, are you just turning through people? If so, that's a significant cost to your business. And so what are maybe the underlying reasons for that? And are there ways that you can reduce that? That's a really easy target for people to understand how they're creating value for their company. I'll give one other quick example, safety rates. So we have a fund that works mostly in manufacturing, you know, many different types of manufacturing companies. And they realized that, you know, they had really high workers' comp insurance because they had a lot of safety incidents. Mm-hmm. And so that's something they can make very actionable and say, okay, this is something we're going to work on. And at each business, they get to figure out what are the different ways in which we could improve on safety. And that can have lots of impacts. People stick around longer. Employees are happier. You're not paying high rates of insurance. All those sorts of things are the impact of understanding what was at the root of that problem.
I just love hearing your examples, because I feel like it's a lot of things that people talk about and a lot of maybe theory, even you're coming from high education and you're really implementing it into a real thing. And so am I understanding correctly that the investors that you tie with, they really are using your software to then evaluate that they want to invest in these companies because they are paying attention to the right things and making advances in these?
Yeah, it's both in the due diligence phase, where they're trying to understand what are the, you know, risks or opportunities that they might have, but then also in the hold period, it really creates value for them throughout holding these companies, making them better companies. They have better exits as a result. So for private equity, it's something that, you know, their whole purpose is to add value to the companies and to try and grow that value and then to exit them after a certain amount of time. And so we're engaged from day one, or, you know, day negative because before they've even made the investment, and then through the hold period and then at exit as well.
Okay. So if I'm a company, we're very highly interested in this topic and having really high culture, we try to pay above market rate, all the things. So what does it look like? We have a listener, you know, and they're really interested in this too. Do they work with you directly? How do you get the data and aggregate it? What does all that look like?
Yeah, so that's really a lot of what our software platform is built to do. We have built a kind of end-to-end software to help with that process. So basically, when we engage with a private equity fund, we identify what are the pieces of information that they want, because some of that varies depending on the industry that they're in and what's really material to the businesses that they are invested in. And so we will work with the portfolio company and identify where does that data live throughout your organization? Because the thing is, that's one of the challenges is often it lives in multiple places. It lives in your HR system and on your fleet vehicle tracker and in your finance department. And those folks aren't really talking to each other. And so we capture that both in surveys, but also try to get at source data as much as possible. So pulling line by line information out of your HR system, or for every vehicle that you have, we're pulling the fuel usage or those sorts of things. And so we bring all that data together, normalize it, also look at the quality of that data, and make sure, is it complete? Do we feel confident in this data? And then we create a series of dashboards that we bring back to the company first to say, here's what we see. What do you see in this? Because they know their businesses better than anyone else. So they might say, oh yeah, well, we have this blip because maybe, you know, these businesses are in a very hot place. And so that's summertime. So our costs for energy usage go up during that period or those sorts of things. Sure. And then with that, we facilitate a conversation between the portfolio company leadership and the fund to say, what are the priorities? And then to track that over time and to help them. We don't determine what those priorities are. They do, and the fund. So sometimes a fund will come in and say, okay, we want targets for all our companies on a certain metric. And then we'll help them to identify how do we get there from where we are. And, you know, I think that piece, that action piece is something that's fairly unusual. Usually folks say, okay, here's your report and hand it to them. But we really think that feedback loop and thinking about how to implement those changes is really where the rubber meets the road.
Mm. I would definitely identify, like, for our listeners, that's such a great takeaway that you just identified for your company that's applicable to all, is any service industry or product. I mean, it doesn't work anymore to just deliver and say good luck. You know, you've got to engage. You've got to say, okay, now let's translate this for you. What does this mean? How can you get the most out of it? So that people are feeling value for the report that they're getting, whether it's on ESG items or finance or, you know, whatever it may be. So good takeaway there is make sure that you're bringing in that customer service piece and the value prop of let's have a conversation about these results. So I would love that you guys are doing that. Okay, so tech is an easy thing to talk about. We can go all day long, but what are you excited about right now in what you guys are doing, where you're going? You know, what are you seeing? I know AI is always a big topic in everybody's mind, but how do you take that conversation?
Yeah. So I will say, like everybody in the tech space, I have done my deep dive on AI over the last year or so. My take probably is a little bit different. Mine is around AI governance. Basically, this is going to be one of the biggest risk factors for businesses moving forward, and understanding how to wrap your arms around it, whether you're building AI into your product or whether it's just that someone's bringing it in the back door and using it. You know, there are significant risks around intellectual property for businesses, privacy around data, those sorts of things. I've talked to a lot of leaders of companies over the last 6 months in particular who are like, I have no idea where to start on this. And so just helping people to put some infrastructure around how to govern that, give clarity to your team. What is acceptable? What can you use AI for? What can't you use it for? And then to create a system where folks can bring these possibilities for innovation to you and say, I want to use this tool. You know, let's assess the risks, but then figure out how we can do this, because there is tremendous opportunity for using these tools to be innovative, to do things so much faster. I mean, I will admit I use AI every single day, and it makes me so much better at my job. I am still a very firm believer that there needs to be a human in the loop, because there also are a lot of challenges with it in terms of algorithmic bias, in terms of, you know, accuracy of information that you're putting out there. I'll give one tiny example. We had someone who had put together a slide deck out of AI, and it took them, 5 minutes, and it was about to go to a client, and I read it and I said, first of all, like, can you speak to all these points? And, right. Having to make sure that we know what's in there, that we think it's accurate, like my nerdy brain reads all of these things and matches up and says, is this the same summary as I would have gotten out of it? So there's still tremendous value in critical thinking and the analysis that we do as humans. And that needs to be brought to bear with AI throughout the process. So I think about it probably a little bit differently than maybe others who are just like, yes, let's use it everywhere. Let's use it, but let's make sure we know what we're doing.
Yes, those early adopters, they're so excited and we're in the same boat. But I do agree with you. It's a tool to be used to enhance what you are doing and maybe add efficiency. It is not to replace what you're doing because, as you said, it's not a one-for-one trade-off there. So interesting question. Have you guys figured out, or is this on your docket of things to do, that one of your measurements within tablecloth.io is to measure, are you using AI and are you using it in a kind of one, I'll use the word safe way, where you are protecting your IP, but you're also managing it. Maybe that's on your guys's roadway.
Yeah, so it is definitely part of our measurement tools now of asking people what they're doing with it. I will say that we've actually productized well beyond that. We developed out a playbook for companies to say, we don't even know where we're starting. How do we start? So how do you put these governance pieces in place? Here are some example policies to jump off of. Here's a risk matrix to assess what risks you have. Here are some education tools for your team. We developed actually a whole framework on how to look at it throughout your organization. And so we're in the process of productizing even more components around this, because I do think that leadership is going to need to wrap their arms around it very quickly in a lot of companies. And so we see it as an opportunity to help them to do that, but then also, as a way to lead them into looking at some of the other things that they're doing as well from a sustainability and governance and resilience perspective.
Yeah, I like a point that you made there about the leadership, because I do see kind of a division that could happen that has to do with risk, where maybe your executive team is out of the day-to-day, right? They have their head in long-term. So you have the remainder of your team working in the day-to-day, looking for efficiencies, looking how to do their job better. And maybe they're adopting these tools without even having maybe a company-wide adoption, because they're learning about them quicker. And that begins to open risk for a company, I could see, because maybe you have something happen that has to be responded to and the executive team didn't even know that's what was being done or sent out, much like the summary you were discussing, that, oh, now we have to retroactively respond to this, and we didn't even know this tool was being used. So right. Now we have to have a whole process around it. So something to watch out for.
Yeah, it's the biggest risk area. It used to be sort of, from a cyber perspective was external. And now it's a little bit more, I think it's about 70% of leaders are looking at it through more of that internal lens. So where are those things coming into our businesses? And do we know how they're being used? What data is being put in there? So you can get ahead of those moments, just as you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. All right. A little bit of a shift. I want to go, we've talked more external and, how your product works in the industry and how we might interact with it. So as the CEO of your firm, and, we've talked a lot more about process, but I'm very intrigued. I'm a CEO. How do you spend your day, Nelly? Like, what does it look like? What are you focused on? What does that look like for you?
Yeah. Oh gosh, how do I break that apart? Every day looks a little bit different, as I'm sure that you can understand. I feel like, you have to be very good at switching every, hour to a completely new thing. So I'm going from this podcast. I have a board meeting later today. I have 2 client calls. I mostly, a lot of how I spend my time is identifying within my team ways in which I can support their work. It's really a nice place to get to, where for a long time I felt like I was still leading in a lot of conversations. Now I have a team that owns their own components of it and gets to just raise their hand and ask for help when they need it. And that's when I get to jump in and be helpful internally. And then a lot of my time is on brand building and being out in the conversations in the world around impact and ESG and sustainability and data. And so whether that is writing pieces, whether that's being on panels, whether that's just being a part of those conversations and being a little bit more the external facing person, be that with investors, be that with potential clients, be that with other thought leaders in the field. Every day is really a new adventure. And that's what I love about it, because I love learning new things. I mean, when I raised some venture capital a couple of years ago, I feel like I got, a master's in economics and a law degree at the same time, because looking at the detail of every step of that, you just are continually learning. I think, that's one of the things I enjoy in life. And and there are always new opportunities. I mean, I never thought I would be an AI person. And now, I can at least speak the language to a basic level.
Sure. It's in your everyday, probably. Along with that, another good topic for our listeners to take something from is you have a larger company now. You have a staff that you can support instead of be the primary of. What is the biggest difference that you have seen from being a smaller stage company in the change for you, the change in your company, maybe what you're focused on and how it operates?
Yeah, I think for me, it has been, I describe it as the move from being the doer to being the teacher and sort of figuring out how to create both systems and processes that others can follow. A lot of the time in the early days, it was sort of like, it's just my gut feeling. Here's how we're going to go. This is, it was a lot more based on the interactions that I was having, as opposed to bringing someone else along and recognizing they're going to need to understand what is the decision tree that I'm going through in my head and actually articulate that so that it's the same decision tree that others can follow. So creating that infrastructure, systems, processes is what allowed us to get to this place of being more of a teenager company as opposed to, small child.
Sure. Instead of early stages. So I'm hearing takeaway there, make sure that you're having some good documentation of what it is that you would have done in that scenario to set them up for success. I think that's important for us to all get down and do that. Along with that, a couple more questions here from internal. What would you say from your experience, someone else that's starting out that's early stage, is there anything you wish you had done sooner or that you learned along the way that would have helped you sooner that someone might be able to implement?
I mean, there are so many things that I would have done differently. And I think, gosh, what is something that someone else can kind of take from that? I'm having a hard time coming up with something quickly. I guess it would be that, first of all, I am so thankful to have found a great partner whose brain is really different than mine. And then also, the biggest thing I think that makes our team and our company successful is the people that are a part of this team. And so, I don't know if this was me being kind of first time entrepreneur, that there were, I probably held on too closely to things to begin with. And, really the magic comes when you empower others to take ownership, to have ideas. Not that I didn't, but I think that, this was kind of my baby for a little while, and I needed to really let others take ownership and have influence. We try to keep a pretty flat organization in terms of hire, like mm-hmm. any idea can come from anywhere. We want everybody's voice in it. And I'm really proud of the culture that has developed as a result. So really just empowering your people earlier.
Oh, I love that. Our team visual for our hierarchy is actually a circle, and we call it our unicorn universe. And my partner and I are in the center of the circle, and everybody else spurns out from that with their labels. And again, like you said, we're there to support them. I couldn't even view it as a pyramid, you know, like, because right. nobody's at the bottom of a really well-built team. Everybody is so important, you know, and there is no bottom of a company or whatever if you're doing it right. So,
I really I love that. I have had a hard time figuring out what the visual should be, because there is still some final decision making or some clarity, mm-hmm. and just, you know, the 25, 30 years that I've been doing it that maybe adds something. But honestly, everyone on my team does their job better now than I could ever do it. Mm-hmm. And that's an awesome place to get to. Whereas it used to be like, I thought of us as utility players that could plug in anywhere. I mean, yeah. Really couldn't at this point.
Yes. My favorite thing is to tell my team, because we do have softwares that we use, but for their particular roles or jobs, I don't even know them. I'm sure I have a login. I've never been in it. And my favorite thing to say is, you know, you can't lean on me for that software because you know 10 times better than I would ever. So nice. That autonomy is a little nice to know that they have it handled better than you do sometimes.
Very much so. Very much so.
Good. Mm-hmm. In that same vein, so I always like to do a financial facts for our listeners, being that I own an accounting firm. So yeah. What is something in your finances that you have found along the way that is kind of your North Star? A lot of CEOs have a handful, maybe, of financials that they kind of pay attention to know that all is good. Is there one that really stands out to you that someone else might be able to utilize in their process that makes sense for you?
Yeah, I mean, I spend a lot of time looking at cost of goods sold, obviously, our COGS, and just paying attention to, you know, what does it take to build what we're doing? I pay a lot of attention to a lot of numbers. You know, on the sales side, obviously, kind of the cost to secure a new client, how much time and energy goes into that. We have a relatively high cost product and high value. And so it's a long sales cycle. So that's another thing that I'm looking at a lot, is just how, you know, looking at that funnel and all the metrics within it of where are those real opportunities? What are the closest to dollar efforts that we're making?
I don't know if this is relative for you guys, depending on how you're doing billing, but for others out there that have SaaS products, we've definitely seen also it's keeping an eye on the cash cycle, because the accrual over a SaaS revenue product can be another one that's helpful for sure.
Very much so. And we, you know, changed over obviously to accrual methodology years ago, you know, as we matured a little bit. And I remember, telling my partner, because he'd be like, oh, okay, we're here. And I'm like, no, what does our bank account say?
Yeah, how's the flow actually coming in? Yeah. Well, and I know it's one thing people don't think about is, you know, everybody wants to think about tech unicorns that they put some money in, they had some coding done, now they're these billionaires or whatever. But the reality is that I actually am married to a prior coder, and it's incredibly expensive to have a product built and built well. I tell my partner all the time, you know, QuickBooks is kind of the bane of our existence. Intuit is not known for good customer service, and that does not align with my values. And so we talk all the time about, you know, we should make a competitor. But when you really consider what it takes to make a great product that would in fact compete, it's immensely expensive. So no, I'm not surprised that you have yourself done fundraising to do that.
Yeah. I mean, we probably spent the first 5 years just cobbling it together as best we could based on revenue. And then we got to a place where we knew what we wanted the product to do. And we knew it was going to take an infusion of capital to be able to move it to that level. We did that in 2021 and 2022. And we're, you know, a year into kind of the full cycle of running through using the new software. And it is incredible. It has probably 3x'd the amount of clients each one of my team can take on. It just streamlines all that work. It used to be a million emails back and forth and lots of meetings. Like the software does the majority of it. And so that's a really fantastic place to get to as well.
Oh, good. I'm glad, because many people don't even achieve like a great functioning software after all the investment. So congratulations. Mm-hmm. That is a big feat. I know that. So good. Awesome. All right. Well, okay. Just a couple more things here that I would say are useful to go over. In the short and kind of medium term, you kind of touched on this, but like more specifically, what are some goals that you're looking to achieve, you know, with what you're doing? I don't know if you set your goals around numbers or impact, you know, what are some of those you're doing?
Yeah. I mean, like everyone, there's a growth goal. And that is both on numbers and impact, or both on kind of financial and impact. And then we certainly also look at efficiency and look at, you know, how well our team does its work and gets product out. One of the big goals for us is always keeping our clients happy and making sure we're getting them value. And so on that, I look at churn. So for us, it's getting a lot of product or a lot of data and analysis out the door. So the fact that we have almost 70% of this year's data collection processed already, mm-hmm. 2 months in is pretty wonderful, and that we have been on average 2 to 3 weeks ahead of deadline on deliverables over the last couple months is something that I'm paying a lot of attention to. And then, you know, it is also some of that qualitative data. So I just did a big round of checking in with all of our clients, given a lot of the kind of macro environment here in the U.S. and how there are a lot of there's been a lot of kind of tumultuous things happening, and just doing a check-in. We're in a space, ESG, DEI, impact, that are lightning rods in this current moment. And so doing a check-in with all of my clients over the last couple of months to say, how are you feeling about it? What are the changes that you want to implement? Should we change some language? Is there any data that we're gathering that makes you uncomfortable? Do you want to look at it differently? And every one of them has said, you know, nope, we're good. We see the value in this because we've worked with you long enough to see where we can get value. And so it's an opportunity for them to tell me kind of how it's going. And they've all just been really positive about our team and being so responsive to their needs and being essentially that extension of their department mm-hmm. to help them to be successful. And that's really a big part. Last year, one of our major goals was what we called our champion glow up. And it was essentially the champions in other organizations that were doing this work. How do we make them look great at their job?
Ah, I love that. Pointing out all the positives that we see is a good way to multiply them. So I would say a very oversimplified takeaway from that wonderful answer there is, you know, never forget about the customer that already said yes. You are going to have a better ROI on making sure that value is still lingering with a customer that has found you and decided they already love you than finding that next new one. But, you know, entrepreneurs, we love shiny things. So don't forget about your base. Okay, last question I like to end with sometimes is, amongst all the things that you are doing, how do you relax? Do you have a hobby? Like, how do you make sure that when you come back to work, you're refreshed and you're ready to be that CEO that your company needs you to be?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think about this a lot. I am what I would describe as, you know, an extroverted introvert. So what I need to recharge is often a little bit of inwards. So much of my day is spent as the face of things and in conversation and engaging. And so I try to give myself that space and time. For example, if I go to a conference and I'm chatting with people from 7 a.m. till 10 p.m., I try to add in a day when I get home to do the basics of do laundry and go grocery shopping and start your week well. Obviously, I have a wonderful community. I try to get outside as much as possible. And I live in a beautiful place that allows me to do that. But sometimes it is just a little bit of turtling inward with a cup of tea and a book that is nothing to do with my work or those sorts of things.
Yes. Well, it's incredibly important because if we don't recharge, you know, we're just never really giving our best. And so I always like to give other ideas for what people are doing. Thank you for that. And with that, I think we've had a great discussion today. Thank you so much, Nelly, for being here. Again, I'm Tevye Holst with Dakota Accounting. Today's guest was Nelly Garten with Tablecloth.io. Please check them out. It's a very important thing that we all should be interested in. And I appreciate you being here today with us.
Thank you. It was an absolute pleasure, Tevye. Thanks for your time.